Okay, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to this next presentation of what we're calling Cinema Innovation in the Digital Experience Economy. Lots of buzzwords in there, but I think good reasons why. I think there's an idea that I think it's got stuck in people's heads, certainly in the early days of the digital economy, that somehow when we talked about exhibition, we were talking about the old world that was going to be swept away by the new home entertainment environment. And I think what we've seen during that time is that this is a highly integrated part of the cinema, of the film value chain. What we have with cinema is a place in which, just as happens elsewhere in the experience economy, like sport, where everyone thought when sport was on television all the time, everyone would stop going to the ground. So they thought this was going to die. And in music, you'll recall, that was another thing. Digital music would kill off live. And what's happened is over the last couple of years, what we found in cinema is what we found everywhere else. That actually it's that experiential bit that drives the whole of the rest of the value chain. This is where demand is created. This is where cinema actually becomes something real. It's something where people engage in a different kind of way, a very different kind of approach. And what we're seeing here, I think, is representatives, which I'll introduce in a moment, of, I think, in AUKUS, and there's a kind of new wave, I think, coming in of people who are trying to say, look, we now are as digital in our cinemas as any Netflix or VOD service. We're as digital as Xbox. We're as digital as Facebook. What's happened is we've become, in the cinema world, we are now part of the digital economy ourselves. And what I think we're going to hear about here is the innovation is based on building that audience kind of participation, this idea of engagement. And we're going to hear, I think, about how that essential building process actually drives demand elsewhere in the digital economy. So I think it's a very big thing here that this isn't something apart from digital. This is bang in the middle of we should be talking about it in those terms. So what we've got is four innovators and four innovators that I think when you look at what they're doing, I think will I always find it amazing. I always find it extremely surprising. When I see the films going out there and I say at Cannes and I look at all those posters on the wall and I realise that most of them will get a relatively small amount of coverage anyway. You know, the chances of them going out, those 1,600 films produced in Europe, the chances of them going out and making a big impact are relatively slim. But these people are the ones that actually are willing to go that extra mile to actually make sure that there is that engagement going on. And they turn those 1,600 films into a percentage of them into something that really matters. So we're going to start with my good friend Maddie from Bristol. The Watershed Cinema is one of those great institutions. I think one of the real innovators that and what they're doing at the moment is not only looking at themselves in terms of innovation, but they're taking a leading role in the Film Audience Network, which is bringing together a great many of the cinemas within the United Kingdom, and again trying to exploit digital technology in terms of networking to create both economies of scale and actually a sharing of ideas. And the next up after that in our four-leg run here is Ivo from the Czech Republic. And again, I think what we're going to hear is a cinema here that's very much involved in the rest of the value chain, and it's interesting to see how that how the distribution work actually fits within the and works within the cinemas and within VOD, which he's also very involved. But again, it's about audience development, and I think we're going to hear a variety of audience development plans that are driving different kinds of films to different parts of the value chain that they're involved with. Tim from Drafthouse, I think when you hear what they're doing, it's always on your website, it's always full of things. This is the coolest cinema ever. But cool is actually not something you normally associate with cinemas. But I think when you hear the kind of work they're doing, I think it seems about right to me. And again, I think when we talk about digital and we talk about the idea of it as being, we're the old world and it's the new world, I think that's pretty much going to be thrown out by the time you get there. And the last, which I think is one of my very favourite things, and I think everyone here is going to be quite moved by it as well. I mean, Gonzalo from Uruguay with the Eco Cinema, and what they're doing is taking cinema out using, I mean, you'll see this in action as it goes on, but going out with solar-powered kind of vans, but taking cinema out to the places that where cinema never reaches. And again, I think there is a big innovation discussion to be had here within Europe, where a big part of our problem is there are large areas of Europe which simply don't have access to cinemas, and we want a European culture which reaches everyone. And I think what we'll see here is going out to the most unlikely places and a huge variety with taking cinema out and then that cinema experience out to little villages in Mexico or yeah, well, you'll hear the whole thing. I don't need to give it any more of a plug. So let's start for. What did I say? No. But you do Mexico as well. Now, Maddie, don't you jump in here. I have seen pictures of Mexico, and if I'm not much mistaken, am I right? Thank you. I will accept your apologies later on, Madeline. And you can make amends by standing up and giving your presentation first.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to this session. And I'd just like to start by thanking Cannes for allowing exhibition a platform. We're often at the bottom of the kind of pyramids within the big bad world of Cannes. And I think it's really refreshing to have a session focused on an exhibition. So I've got a presentation. I don't know whether it will come up in a second. So I'm Maddie Props from Watersheds. I'm the cinema producer there in Bristol. And I also, as Michael said, leads a sort of kind of regional network which stretches from Cornwall to Birmingham, so it's quite a big region, and we work collaboratively with a range of festivals and cinemas across that region to try to find ways of really creating conversations about films across a range of cinemas. We're in the business of culture, not the culture of business. And I think we're all about really extending audience choices and diversifying the audiences for a diverse range of films from all over the world. You can go to the next slide. We've had a good year against a backdrop of a 5% drop in admissions in the UK. I guess we're not really following the trends of, you know, an aging audience at Watersheds. We're lucky to have two universities and a 30-year relationship with audiences, long-term audience development and a consistent approach to film culture over that period. We're also constantly innovating. I mean, it's a word that's being used a lot, but I think to pay homage to our sector, we have always been innovators. You know, we started as magicians, probably right at the beginning of cinema exhibition. We've always innovated, and at Watershed, we try to keep that spirit alive. I wanted to present a project which is called Conversations About Cinema, and just to share with you a little bit about how it started. Started very much as a local thing. Our university approached us to try to improve their engagement with audiences. And we decided to create this partnership where we would get access to some really good academics, not necessarily film academics, but philosophers, people that work in archaeology and different fields, to come and introduce screenings with a very, very short intro and then follow up with a conversation in a bar. Very informal, quite small, quite bijou kind of sessions. We also introduced a board, which is really a simple concept, very lo-fi, which just basically invites the audience to share their thoughts about the films. It's not a moderated board. It's not just about saying great things about the films. We used to have just reviews up there. Nobody used to look at them. And now they stop. Everybody stops. It's like the internet on a board. And the results that were starting to come in were really encouraging. you know, 95% capacity to go and see Au revoir les enfants is not our usual result. And sort of peak with the screenings that are introduced. Next. So we decided, okay, we're doing this in Bristol, it's great, but we are one independent site. We need to work collectively with other independent sites and see whether this can be scaled up, and whether actually that audience, that fantastic audience feedback we're getting in Bristol can be sort of expanded on. We'd already done quite a lot of work with making sure we tweet the comments and we put Twitter comments on the in the venues, so trying to play between the physical and the online space. We partnered up with Belfast and Chapter in Wales as well, and a whole range of organisations across the UK to start testing that out. Next slide. And I should add, it was with support of the BFI, National Lottery. It was about £70,000 investment, and we managed to generate another £70,000 on our own to do this. I think what's specifically interesting with this project is it is audience-led. You know, we are places where people come together, experience quite profound things. And what we've done really is just enhanced that conversation a little bit and created a space where they can share their thoughts on and offline. And also it's about making those conversations more visible. We know great things happen in the screen like this every day, but how do you actually make that more visible? By partnering up with another two venues and also the rest of the film audience network, you start seeing how if you multiply that that thing that's happening in Bristol, it can become very, very interesting. So we decided to focus on a theme called Impact of Conflict, which was tying in with the kind of war anniversaries that were happening, but also current conflicts. Next. So we managed to agree on something, which is good. The independent sector is great because it's very exciting, but it's also a complex space because we're all doing our own thing. But we managed to agree on a set menu of films. And as you can see, some of the films on there are actually they're at the challenging end, you know, the last of the unjust Timbuktu. But rather than talking about challenging, we wanted to talk about these are conversation films. They can start conversations. We created a web platform, but we didn't want to create a big destination site. We don't have the money to create a really big brand. But what we knew we could do is aggregate some really interesting content that would come from all the different venues. So at Watershed, we film a lot of our introductions, for instance. And we can do that from the box because we've invested in a little studio thing and we can publish content very quickly. We also always wanted all the content to be shareable for the venues because we're not going to reach communities in Belfast through Watershed's web platform. We want to be on the Belfast Facebook page. We want all the content to be easily shareable by audience members and also by the venue partners and the distributors, incidentally, to try to sort of shift the marketing strategy away from just that kind of red carpet, London, capital, here's the film. We want to sort of create a buzz once the film comes out as well. Next. Just a couple of examples. So we did some simultaneous Facebook ads that were replicated in all the sites. I mean, this was a film that never got distributed in the UK. It was shown at a festival, and then that was it. And we got some really great results for the film. Next. Also experimented with Twitter chats involving audience members and a bunch of speakers from different, well, from all over the world, actually, and from Bristol, to participate in conversation at a set time, also using Skype to bring in people like Anne-Marie Jassier, who was curating Palestinian Season for us. So, you know, it's still live, the project, so we will publish some more extensive results, and we hope it will carry on iterating and improving. But so far, you know, in terms of reach, really good admissions for quite challenging titles. it's been fantastic in terms of capturing the impact we might be having on individuals and society and our community. It's been very much about developing the appetite and making that more visible for diverse films, and importantly, trying to incentivize more venues to take a risk. I mean, in the UK, something like 7% of sites or venues are dedicated to specialist cinema. It's not high. It might be a little bit higher than that. These figures were from a couple of years ago, but there's scope for doing a lot more. And finally, it's been a great thing in terms of building relationships with distributors and reminding them that we should be working together. Next. Finally, I think we're already looking at the legacy of this project. We did an experiment with Girlhood, La Bonne de Fille, which screened at Cannes last year. And we were really interested in this film when we saw it at Cannes. So a range of exhibitors kind of got together and we were thinking, what can we do to make that film work in the UK, where subtitled films seem to be such an issue? How can we reach young black girls with this film and younger people? So we organized a school screening before the opening of the film, and also invited a whole range of ambassadors to our venues. We worked with Interfilm and the Film Audience Network on this. And I just wanted to show a few clips to give you a sense of what we captured after the film and how that can be disseminated. If we can just go to the next slide. As you can see, here we have a little audience reaction to the film. It's been shared 300 times. We only posted this about a week ago, and this was just Bristol. I think if everybody did this, it might become interesting in terms of visibility. So we'll just show a few minutes. We won't show the whole thing because I know we're pressed for time.
We're going to ask a couple of questions, and we'll open up just for some brief questions. What we're going to do is, after each one of the sessions, we'll have a quick chat about the kind of lessons learned, and then we'll kind of bring a little bit of a conclusion at the end amongst us all. It's just a thought to me was what you're looking at here, and I think that last clip illustrated it best, is the approach to cinema is now, to cinema that you're talking about, audience development, is multifaceted, because you're starting off with the idea of individual, I hate this word engagement, just means it's an emotional reaction is what we're talking about. It's feeling this film belongs to me. I actually understand it. This is something I want to be part of. So that emotional engagement happens first at the individual level, and you're kind of trying to find ways to empower that. Then you've got that kind of broader, because individuals talk to each other, and I think it's that approach of getting people to talk to each other, I think, is another big part of what you're doing. And what interests me is you're then trying to radiate that out, so there's now a new level where that networking can take place. So I could see out of that approach the way that diverse cinema could actually get out there, because there's a lot of pessimism, I think, at the moment about the diversity of cinema. But this seems to me like at least it has logic on its side. The question for me, for you, is Girlhood's actually a rather brilliant example, but how far have we still got to go? Because I know that what you do at Watershed is quite heroic. You try stuff out, and there'll be certain types of films, I suspect, that at this stage you haven't quite nailed it yet. There'll be films that, what do we need to do as the next step on to really make that kind of very logical approach work for a much wider variety of films?
Well, I think this is where networks come into play. So networks like the Film Audience Network, national networks, but also international networks like Europa Cinemas. We need to collaborate more, coordinate more. We need to learn from the homogenized big players out there. Social media and digital opens up lots of possibilities for ground up marketing, guerrilla style marketing. You recently mentioned that that's also happening in gaming, where they're creating local communities, and then the buzz can come from the ground up. It doesn't need to come from, the Guardian review four stars. We're not developing audiences with just preaching to the converted. Those people would come to Watershed anyway. What we're interested in is these girls coming to Watershed. So how do we get to them? And how do we work with partners, whether it's education bodies like Into Film or youth clubs, or just build communities, really, of curators. The film was shot by a young man who's doing, by Adam, who was featured in the film, who's doing a scheme at the moment with us to learn to be a curator and a programmer. So, you know, he's working with us. And that's, you know, the young woman, Liz, as well, who speaks at the end, is also doing an MA in curation at Watershed. She's there one day a week. She introduced the film, which probably made these young girls feel comfortable about then going on camera. So I think it's really important, if we're going to try to reach new audiences, that we really do that properly and find ways of not just talking to the cinephiles and actually finding what are the communities of interest for all these films we're trying to champion?
Right, so I mean, the evangelical approach you're talking, which actually, I mean, we're going to hear this quite a bit here, actually means going outside of your cinema to get people in. But I'm interested, that thematic idea that I don't have to go out and sell it. I mean, here in Cannes, when we're talking to each other, we often say, oh, have you seen the new Van Sant? What did you think of it? You know, we talk about directors and we talk about us in our cinephile way. We live in a world in which we talk the same way about films. But outside of that film world, it seems to me you've got to try and capture some communities around around the themes, as you've done with Girlhood. But that presumably is harder for some films than others.
Well, it's very hard in the UK for any subtitled films. I think, you know, a film like Timbuktu, which is another film that's in the menu, which has done brilliantly in France. In the UK, we are quite concerned about how that film will play. You know, we'd be lucky if venues kept it on for a week. And what we're going to try to be doing with this is really, first of all, encourage the venues to take the risk with that film, really try to work with African Film Festival partners that have a good reach on the ground, and try to give that film a life and through, you know, finding the ambassadors and the champions that will make the film work. And I don't think that will come from premieres in London or just, you know, red carpet stuff and print media. Things have changed. We really have to find new ways of doing it.
Okay, and very briefly, it seems to me this is an area where the filmmakers themselves. We were talking yesterday in the film forum in that the commission was running about the idea. I think increasingly important to get these ideas in early. You know, for the filmmakers to be thinking about how that experience might be on the ground. I wonder what's the relationship like with filmmakers? Do they come in? Are they involved?
Yeah, I think filmmakers completely get it. You know, their primary aim is not to be here doing business. They want their films to be seen by audiences. They want their films to be shown on big screens, as well as have an impact on a whole range of platforms so they can make the next film. They understand it. They want to meet the audience. And the more we can make that relationship between the cinema, the audience, and the filmmakers, the creators, the better.
Okay. Any questions or any points you wish to make? Okay, we're kind of pushed for time, so that's fantastic, Maddie. That's worth a lot. I'd give you a round of applause, but I'm in a... Okay, we'll move over to the Czech Republic and Ivo.
Yes, hello, thank you. Thank you for inviting. Thanks for the floor. If I can ask for a presentation, I think if I take it from what we just spoke about, this presentation should demonstrate that for us as a... cinema, the digitalization of the whole cinema industry and the film industry, and enhanced with the possibilities that online media gives us now, brought us one big advantage. This is the possibility of reaching, of targeting, actually defining much very small and specific target groups for various content. We have more content now available, and we have more possibilities how to advertise it. I will get to that later in this presentation. If I can ask for next slide. There is many slides. I'll be asking for slides. Okay, just briefly who we are. We are running five cinemas in Czech Republic. They are all classic old cinemas with six screens all together, five galleries. Each cinema has a gallery, bar. We have one film shop in Prague. We established a distribution company 10 years ago. We opened the first cinema 15 years ago, so that's about us. Next, please. This is, I think, one of the topics that we are hitting here today. That's the big fight between cinema and the sofa, and it's a new topic. It's Michael mentioned, discovery of television, video recorders, all sorts of stuff that each time disappeared. It was like this big new thing that will completely destroy the cinema, because why people should go to watch films if they can record them from TV? Now we have VOD, and everybody says this might be the end of the cinema. I don't believe that. I think what cinema has is, of course, the social experience, which we, if we work with that right, and we use all the tools that digitalization gives us, we can make a pretty good battle. I mean, the battle is tough. You have to ask one person to leave the sofa, get dressed, go somewhere, pay for the ticket, and that's a lot of things to ask one person. It's a lot of time and energy. So what we have to offer in for that? Please, next slide. Social experience. Let's go further. That's what we are offering now. Can we get next slide, please? Now let me start with presenting our situation in Czech Republic. This is an average Czech person that goes to cinema 1.2 times a year, to a museum 0.9 a year, theater 0.5 admissions a year, art galleries 0.3. Every day it spends 3 hours and 20 minutes in front of TV, 140 computer. This might be wrong numbers already, because they're a couple years old anyway. Now, this presentation, these are people that are living the world now. If we imagine ideal world from our point of view, from our company's point of view, it would be different. Let me show next slide. We would forget all these numbers, and here we have born of our new ideal customer, whose name can be Jean-Michel, for example, if we are in France. And let's walk with him through his life. And let's demonstrate what I said at the beginning, how we can use various projects, various target groups throughout the life of Jean-Michel to make sure that he spends his whole life in our cinema. Please, next slide. Okay, so he was born, he's 1 year old, and we want him to be there. He has parents that used to go to cinema every night. Now they can't, because they, in the evening they have to care for a baby. So in the morning we show special films, not special films, films for the parents. But they can bring the kids. There is no complete darkness. We keep shade. The films are not too loud, so we don't scare the kids. But the parents can watch films which they don't have normally time for in the evening. Nobody's bothered by the kids running around or breastfeeding or whatever happening around. So 1 year old Jean-Michel, it's his first visit to our cinema. Please, next. Now he's 5, he still comes to the cinema with his parents, of course. So every Sunday or Saturday we have 1 hour screening of animation films, and then the kids have workshops to enhance what they've experienced with their own hands and minds. Next, please. Okay, Jean-Michel is 10. We try to make sure that anybody that's born in Prague and is below 12 years old visits our cinema at least once. Because, we all know that all the social studies tell us that if a person do not visit some kind of establishment when it's really young, it's not likely that that person would return there when it's adult, in his older years. So, and that goes not for cinemas, that goes also for theaters, that goes for libraries. So we try to make sure that we have enough to offer to any kid in Prague. This is a filmmaking workshop. We have, of course, screenings and other things. Maybe we can move to next slide. Just to make sure that this can be sooner or later in his age, a person that would like to visit cinema again, because he experienced that when he was little. This is a summer camp for kids that we organize with actors. They watch films, they make films, and they do all sorts of fun. Next, please. Now, when you are 15, you are not followed by your parents to the cinema anymore, of course, but maybe you start looking at girls or boys, and it's time to take them for a date. This is a project we set up especially for this target group called Blind Date with Cinema. They don't have to come in date, of course, but the idea is that they come and they don't pay. because they don't know what film we are showing. And so we let them in, they watch the film, and when upon their leave, they decide how much they want to pay depending on how much they like the film. It's quite risky because, of course, what can happen is that you come to the cinema and you've seen the film before. So if you leave within the first 5 minutes, you get free drink at the bar, so, you know, for a waste of time as a compensation. Okay, next. When people grow, they like to get in interaction with what they do, also with the cinema. So they like to get involved in what's happening inside of the building. This is a project called Film Jukebox, which is online. It's a website where people can vote for film they want to see from pre-selected movies. Quite popular. Next, please. Aero Shorts is a short film competition. Jean-Michel is 22. He has ambitions now to make, you know, his first Oscar movie, and he would like this movie to be seen. So people send us lots of short films. We try to select a couple of them that then we show on screen, which is the main award, of course, for any filmmaker to be seen by people coming to the regular screenings. And yeah, it's been running for 10 years. It's little filmmakers. Next, please. In 25, people like to party a lot, and they don't like to stick to the same thing, so they like to explore their city. We have a project called Cinema Royale, which is working on similar basis as event cinema projects elsewhere, like Secret Cinema. So we explore Prague, we find places that have not been touched by a man food for a long time. We set up screenings there. It's all, you know, cinema-specific event with a big party afterwards. People love it, of course. Next. We don't like to sit in our places and just wait for the people to come. We try to reach for them. This is an example of what we do in film festival Karlovy Vary, big festival in Eastern Europe. Every year we set up an abandoned building there to a club, so people that see all those films, they have place to relax in the evening. So we believe there might be some potential consumers of our cinemas later as well. Next, please. Okay, now Jean-Michel's 29. He maybe come back from this festival. Maybe he's still with this girlfriend that he took to the blind date when he was 15. And they are moving out of their parents together, so they need something to put on their shelves. We have a shop to offer lots of interesting things, mainly film posters, books, etc. Next, please. Our cinemas also host organize sometimes lots of specific film festivals, you know, with specific films, retrospectives. Of course, this is a very important thing for us to make the programming more interesting. Not all the films are distributed naturally, so you want to show as much as possible so the people can choose from a big variety of titles. Next, please. 45, this is another event type of activity that we do. It's connecting two, for many people, favorite things, film and food. I heard Michael, you could be one of those. Yeah. So this is one of our cinemas turned to one night to a restaurant in the foyer. So we show film and then there's a dinner with some fun. Next, please. When you are 50, you realize that film is, dead medium. It's a low form of art, of course. There is much higher ones like opera or theater, and you realize that luckily, thanks to the technologies and projects like the Met in HD and others, you don't need to leave your favorite cinema to experience that. So, alternative content, I think most growing part of the cinema industry is an important part of what we do. Next, please. When you are 65, you start start looking back. You look what was your life like, and what was the greatest moments of your life. You realized they were all happening in the cinema. So it's now time to pay back a little bit, so you can adopt your seat or participate in any other marketing projects we have in order to make sure the community is strong and sends us a little bit of money from time to time. Next, please. Yeah, 75 special screenings for senior citizens. Sorry for the picture, my colleagues prepared. Yeah, it's kind of the end of the circle, right? You started 1 year old, coming to the cinema in the mornings. Now you're 75. Evenings are not so good for you anymore. It's dark and it's dangerous. So there is morning screenings for senior citizens. Also very popular, very important target group, of course. We are all healthier than ever before and richer than ever before. So this is important target group as well. Yeah, I think that's it. Next slide. Yeah, thank you.
I was expecting you to go through his death at this point, because you must do something for dead, dearly departed. Also, what happened between 29 and 45? Was that his drugs years? I'm interested to know.
Those are missing, I guess.
The missing years. Yeah, he probably just remember broken marriage, depression.
You always have blank parts of your life.
Yeah, yeah. And then when you're 50, like I am, then you've given up. Is that what you're saying? You've given up on cinema. You only want to watch old operas. It's okay, we'll talk about it later. In the meantime, I mean, I think what you're showing there, though, is something that's really incredibly important, that people react to cinema differently at different times. I think there is the definition, when you hear people talking about cinema, there's still that sense that I hear, even from quite experienced people in around Cannes, that you know, you're basically in the popcorn business. They're doing the hard work, and you're there selling the concessions. But it seems to me that what you're looking at here is something that's it's quite close to what Amazon does with its big data. You're kind of capturing how people are living and their lifestyles and trying to provide different choices. I wonder how do you make those decisions?
I think the presentation itself is, of course, much more sophisticated than the daily life. Okay, it's a sum up. It's one way to look at it through the age. Of course, there is other criteria that you can use. But once we came up with this idea, we sort of keep it. This is an easy way how to illustrate what we are to all our employees, to everybody. So we are all on the same page all the time. And, you know, throughout the years, we sort of like it. So I don't know if that's answering your question, but we just use criteria of age to being the easiest one for everyone to understand what we do and how to explain our various projects.
I guess what you're saying is, I mean, you test these are getting tested all the time, every time someone...
I should say before that, of course, most of those projects are not ours, you know, ideas. They've been in... I go to places like this and I get inspired by what people do in other places. That's the first thing. And of course, that's okay. And other thing is that those projects that survived. The presentation of projects that didn't work would be probably 2 hours long, and I didn't want to do that.
Yeah, but that kind of experimentation is important. I also think there's an important point to make, that innovation is constantly seen up. We've got to reinvent everything. You always bring Isaac Newton into this discussion at this point, being a very, very old man heading towards death at rapid speed. That Isaac Newton's whole standing on the shoulder of giants, it's that kind of thing. The greatest innovators has ever been are saying, look, you find out what other people are doing, and if they've already done it, we need to learn how to take those ideas and adapt them to our situations. But it seems like there's not enough prestige given to that.
I don't feel wrong about that at all. But I think in Europe, especially when you see somebody doing something in Sweden and working out, you have to try. The culture differences and borders, the language barriers are so strong that you always have to reinvent. You can't just take, just copy things. And so it's always a matter of, you know, checking your possibilities and checking your surroundings and how to adjust things that you like to your own world. That's always what you need to have in mind.
Adaptation is the key to that. I just want to ask you one thing, because you've captured the different lifestyle things here, and I think Mad is doing a lot of that in the watershed as well. But what I'm really interested in, I think a lot of people in Cannes are interested in, is a lot of the films that we want, the culture we want, is where you find people watch films that they don't know they're going to like. It's that element of surprise. And it seems to me what you've done here is very important. You've captured the commonalities in lifestyle, but what you're trying to do is to sneak in things that they don't necessarily know that they want. And is that still the most difficult thing?
To build that kind of trust, I think it takes years, and you need to have a label that people rely to, that are, you know, that like to come back to you, that you didn't disappoint them too many times before. So then they, of course, those people are much more loyal, and you can play higher games with those, like showing them films they don't know what they're gonna see, because they trust it's going to be not the worst film of their lives, you know, if they take the risk with you.
Of course, when you've got him at one, we should be showing Jean-Michel when he's won lots of kind of late Godard. I mean, he's not going to know, is he? We should just be shoving stuff in for him.
Yeah, of course, for those specifically, you have to choose films without too much violence, guns, sex, because, you know, the parents wouldn't like to experience those films with their kids, I guess.
I think that's where it went wrong for me. Anyone got any questions from the audience? Yes, at the back. Is that John Dick hiding in the dark?
Hi, Maddie, this is no criticism at all. I did notice how pleased you were with the under 25 figures, but it's still less than 10% of the total. You had 138,000 and around 10,000 under 25. And in the UK, with those circumstances, that's still a great result. But what I'd like to ask Ivo is, what are his under 25 numbers like? How does this strategy play through to his numbers? How long has he been running it, and has he seen an effect on that and getting that young audience in?
Actually, that's a big struggle for us as well. I think most of the audience is 25 plus. And opposite to British audience, I think in the eastern part of Europe, we don't have so much art house audience 40 plus. So, because, you know, there was a disruption through the communist era, so my parents didn't see all those films they should have seen when they were 16. So now they are not really art house audience, and we don't have many of those. So films like, you know, Ken Loach, we have to show them to 25 to 40, while in Britain, I assume, would be 40 plus most of its audience. So it's a struggle, and it's hard to measure as well how well you've done with the projects that you aim to these people, because you do what you can, and then they come in some numbers, and that's it. You don't know what would happen if you haven't done the work. So we keep on trying, and, you know, it's a small corner, but I think it's important, because without that kind of, I don't want to use the word elite, but, you know, without art house audience, I think this world would be a different place. So for some reason, we are sure that it's important for us to try to make sure that that audience don't die, that we have something to offer to it, I guess.
I guess with Watershed, the core audience is 25 to 40, so it's not the kind of 40 plus that is the trend in the UK overall. With that young audience, it is hard to capture the figures. But we've got to accept some things, like, for instance, school groups can't come out easily in the UK. So we're working instead in partnerships with schools and into film. So we've built a little cinema in one of the local schools, who used to come really regularly to our venue, and we don't capture those kind of figures. We also do lots of pop-up events. We recently showed Silent Running at the Eden Project, where suddenly the demographic drops massively. We've worked with bands and music festivals. We presented The Passion of Joan of Arc, for instance, at a festival in London, which was, you know, attended by thousands of people, all pretty much under the age of 25. It's just fine. It's not necessarily captured in our core figures. And also we might engage with them in different ways, which is more about participation. We have like an open studio, which is open every Friday for entrepreneurs, innovators, artists to come together and inspire each other. So the relationship might not be that relationship of just sitting in the cinema and watching a film, but we're still building the community and building the trust, which hopefully means that they will come and see a Bellatar film at Watershed at some point in their lives.
I mean, it's worth pointing out, I mean, the question that John asked there is a very, very important one, which is, how do we get those young audiences? Because we need to refresh the roots. It is worth pointing out, I think, that the average age now has gone up and up and up. So the average age in Germany, I just read, will be 50 in the next kind of 5 years. So there actually is an art house, or there's an audience that stays with film and doesn't go away. You know, there is actually a very big core audience. Sometimes I feel we talk about I don't think middle age starts at 50, whatever you're doing in the Czech Republic. I think there's still a sense at that point. So there's the actions of refreshing the roots is one thing, but actually in the percentage of the population, it's actually not all that far off from...
It's also people keep on getting older. Yeah. So whilst I'm really focused, we're really focused on young audiences, you know, they do keep on getting older. They don't just die and then no longer...
That's a bit selfish. Should do Logan's Run.
No, but it's important to remember that. And maybe there are times where your taste evolve and changes. And there are times where you might be watching The Hunger Games. There are times where you might be ready for something a little bit more challenging.
Okay, we've got a question here. Mark.
Yeah, it's not really a question, I guess. It's just a comment. And Maddie sort of stole my line. Which is the great thing about young people is they get older and then they become the audience, that core audience. But the important thing to is that we are there. You know, so Watershed that I work at has been there for 30 years and hopefully will be there for another 30 years. We are part of the cultural landscape of the city that we're in, and we don't just live in isolation from everything else that happens. So we've got relationship with lots of different, you know, cultural spaces. And, you know, as I say, young audiences knowing that we are there, and then, you know, we try and get them in. But as they get older, they will then, their tastes evolve, change, develop, and they know that we are there offering something which is distinctive and different from, you know, the other offers that are around.
Mention it, Mark, very quickly. I think, you know, there are different points in your life, and I think this is what's captured in Ivo's presentation, but you did some work around Amour, which is very interesting, because, again, there's stages in your life where supposedly difficult films, you try to make them relevant within the kind of groups that you do.
Yeah, well, on that example is that, you know, as we are indeed living longer, so people are dealing with older parents. You know, and we're dealing with people that are, you know, at the end, coming towards the end. And we've actually screened Amour working with a palliative care conference that was happening in Bristol. And this guy approached me about, you know, would we show some cultural, you know, they're doing cultural activities with it. And I thought, oh, this is a bit sort of bizarre, you know. But then when I thought about it, having experienced Amour here in Cannes a couple of years back, then that perfectly opens up that conversation. And we screened a number of films, Still Alice, Last Orders, and then Amour, just last week. And we had a fantastic, very moving conversation in the cinema afterwards, because people are dealing with their real lives. And what that film does is it opens up a space for a conversation about your real life and your experience. And that age can be obviously younger.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyone else got a point or a question they want? It's one at the front.
Hi, yeah. just for Ivo. I really think your presentation is relevant to the lifestyle of most people. And I think it would work well in the African countries. I'm being from South Africa. I think the lifestyle that we live, is, your presentation is really relevant to us. It's convenience. And any chances of your cinemas moving?
There we go, international expansion.
Thanks for the hint. We will think about it, I know, but I don't know. It's a bit far for us, I think. But I'm sure you have great cinema operators down there, and it's just inspiration can be, you know, travels faster than us.
And I think that is what we're talking about here, is trying to network. I mean, Africa to me is still a big discussion, because we talk about diversity, but there's a whole continent where we're not really, cinema is not the voice of the main expression and an art form that counts the way. And I think this idea of the evangelical approach, I suspect, probably will mean sharing ideas across continents. It's just people on the ground need to be doing things.
But it's also just to say what's distinctive, I think, about Ivo's model and maybe the Watershed model is, you know, they are very... They work very well in their locations. In South Africa, you're the solution. You know, take what you can from these presentations and you do it. You know you know your country. You know what the partners are. You can do that.
Go and open a cinema.
Open
you
a
yourself.
Cinema.
Do it when you get home. It's going to be easy. We have one more question here. Can you just take the mic and then we'll move?
It's a remark. I'm I'm Frank from Rotterdam in the Netherlands. And in the Netherlands, we're very blessed with a marketing tool called Cineville. I don't know if any of you may have heard of it. It's a marketing pass. It's a subscription pass that connects all the art house theaters of the Netherlands. And if you, it's 17 or 18 euros a month, and you can go to all the art houses. I know it also exists in different cities, but somehow there's two young guys in Amsterdam that went to connect all the art house cinemas. And the tide has turned. There's actually a lot of young people that are part of the Cineville network. They have, I think, over 10 or 11,000 subscriptions now, and they work with Vice, they work with Jameson, and they're very smart in their marketing and doing it nationwide. And I think it's great. There's a lot of young people coming to art house cinemas now.
I think that just because we're going to move on to Tim in a moment, but I think that point in both of the first two presentations was, I think it's worth remembering, this is the best time in history to be an art house film fan. I don't, if you're not already aware and you reach and you're older, you know, remember I was at film school in the 80s and you couldn't see most of the films that we're talking about now. If you already are a cinephile, this is the best time there's ever been. The problem we have, and I think the question from John at the back there was alluding to this, is that's not enough. Actually, what we need to do is to find ways of getting new people in and getting them excited. And I think in both ways, we're probably at the beginning of the process. I would guess in both of your cases that there's a hell of a long way to go, but there's a kind of logic in it. So, Tim, let's move to you. You don't need to do any of that presentation stuff. You're going to wow us.
We'll see. I'm starting off on a bad foot, technology and digital, and I can't even get a PowerPoint slide up on screen. So my name is Tim League. I'm the founder and CEO of Alamo Drafthouse Cinema in the States. We started out in 1997 as a single-screen art house theater, and over the years we've expanded. Right now we have 19 locations. I'm from Austin, Texas. Half of our theaters in Texas, but over the last few years we started to branch out into other cities. We're in Michigan, New York, Virginia, and we're building in San Francisco, Los Angeles, and Omaha, Nebraska. I don't know why we're in Omaha, Nebraska. It's a great town, actually. So I had this strange transition in that I was an engineer straight out of college and just found out that I didn't like my field of study way too late. I should have figured it out when I was just a kid and what I like to do is watch movies. So on my way to work at Shell Oil, which is my former employer, I haven't had too many jobs. I was a busboy, worked for Shell Oil, and I was a movie theater owner. That's all I know how to do. And so I saw an abandoned movie theater, and a week later, at the age of 23, I signed the lease with no business. You know, I already told you my business experience, and certainly it wasn't running a movie theater. But eventually, we figured it out. So now we're in this position where we're expanding to nationwide. Right now, we have a pretty significant audience. We're a mix between art house and commercial. We have about 600,000 people that come through our turnstiles every month. And that's growing. We'll have 25 theaters by the middle of next year, and we're trying to get to 50 theaters by 2019. So we're not a mom and pop theater anymore, and we're also spread out. So the first thing I wanted to talk about was our use of data, and I think this probably comes back from my engineering roots. I love data, and I think this is an incredible time to leverage really strong use of data. So there's two things that I'll mention that we do. The first is how we stay in touch with how our customers are experiencing our venues. We use a piece of software called Listen 360, which gathers feedback from people that buy tickets online. So once a quarter at most, you'll be given a single question survey on a scale of 1 to 10. How likely are you to recommend this experience to a friend? If it's below 7, we want to know what we screwed up. If it's above 7, we want to know what you liked about it. And it seems like a simple set of questions, but it's hundreds of thousands of data points, and it gives us what's called a net promoter score. It's the Bible for retail and customer service experiences. And so we have a mandate that score, it's based on a scale of 1 to 10. The score is on a scale of 1 to 100. So our venues all have to be performing above 70, and that's puts you in sort of a world-class customer service environment. And if you are not, we start on a very detailed daily regimen of what are you screwing up and how are we going to fix that? And if you can't fix that, then who is going to take your job and fix that? And so all of our managers are bonused on it. We take that data further so that individual job positions, if there's specific things that are wrong, whether it's rude box office staff, we can parse it down to the person that was on staff at that time. So we use that data every single day. Most of our employees start off their day by looking at that, and it's the most important piece of information that we have. And it's an incredibly robust tool where you can dive into specific examples. And that's how I can find out how things are going in Kalamazoo without being in Kalamazoo. So that's one use of technology and data that I really love. The other is just this sense of big data. We hear that term thrown about, you know, and it's a little bit scary sometimes, you know, if you're shopping for an arts and crafts lamp online and then for whatever reason, for the next month, all I see in my ad feed is arts and crafts lamps. Somebody's screwing with my brain. So we employ those same techniques with our customers to a certain extent. So we use for our software for ticketing a company called Vista out of New Zealand. They're really expanding quickly, and what I like about that is by being a big player, now they're investing in technology. They have a great development team. And they also have a loyalty module. And so the loyalty module is what we use to kind of parse that data. So we've taken our customers' transaction history over the last 10 years, anybody that's on our email list. And so we know what time they saw movies, what movies they saw, what sort of genres they saw. And then we also serve at the theater, we serve food and beer, wine. We tie in that data stream so we know what they ate and what they drank. And so what that allows... Oh, and there's one other data stream that we tie in. It's the interaction with the website. So since Vista runs our website and this loyalty program, we can know, for example, if somebody watched the trailer for Boyhood, for example, but yet has not transacted with us, and Boyhood is going to be leaving the cinema that week, we can offer that group of people a special offer to say, hey, it's the last week of Boyhood. Why don't you come out and check it out for, you know, $2, $3, whatever it is. The goal of that type of data is to increase frequency of the guests coming to the cinema. How can we use that data, knowing what they like to watch and what they like to consume, to present meaningful offers or free giveaways or whatever, to increase their frequency to come more and more often? You know, it is... Some people are completely creeped out by that idea that we're looking at as every little piece of their life and their interaction with the company. But if it gives them the right free things, then they forgive us for that. The other technology tool, and this is moving away from the big data, we've been very, very happy with results that we've had recently utilizing digital advertising. I already mentioned the arts and crafts lamp. That's basically a tool called retargeting. It's very simple to do through. I mean, Google's the big player in this game. So, what I really love about retargeting for cinema is that if you target people that have been to your website in the past year and feed them with ads for your website, they're seeing a banner ad for your cinema, and you're not actually paying for a significant amount of money if they just see it and don't click, but they are seeing it, and it's reinforcing the idea that, hey, I do love the Alamo Drafthouse. Maybe at some point I'm going to go watch a movie. And so we do retargeting ads, and we don't expect the same type of return that we do for this other type of advertising that I'll reference. But I think it's good money spent because it's a relatively cheap way to get your brand out there over and over and over and over. And you know that they're your customers because they've already been. We're specifically just retargeting people that have been to the Alamo Drafthouse before. And again, that idea of increasing the frequency of coming to the cinema. The other thing that we've done is we've tied in through Google Analytics our ticketing software. So We can take out ads on Google, and it's great because through their advertising engine, you can be very specific about who you are targeting. And movies are the most incredible way to do this because they have stars. So people that are fans of Natalie Portman, for example, you can target just those people. You know, we first started doing this way back a long time ago with Sex and the City, of all things. I've never seen that show or that television or the movies, but apparently there are people that are very big fans of it. And so we only targeted people that were fans of Sex and the City to tell them about our promotions that we were doing. And the results were tremendous. But what we're now able to do, because of Google Analytics, we're able to, in real time, we can run 10 different campaigns, all with subtle variations on a theme for a particular movie, and then get data back as to how many tickets we've sold. And so it's this incredible, it's the best type of advertising, because you can put up a radio spot or a billboard. You really have no idea how effective that is. But by placing ads, the most recent campaign we did was for Ex Machina, the sci-fi movie. We did a variety of different means of targeting sci-fi groups and gauged how many of those actually ended up in tickets. And what we were able to do is work with the distributor in the States to say, this is the new form of co-op advertising, which back in the day, we would pay half of a newspaper ad, the studio would pay half of a newspaper ad, and it would benefit both of us. And so we were able to convince them to do the exact same thing. That they paid for half of the digital campaign, we paid for half of the digital campaign, and then we presented real, just set it up to be reporting daily. These are how these campaigns worked, and on average, it was about the revenue we were getting was about 4 to 5x the spend that we were doing in the digital space. It was cheap, it was good, it was an effective means of doing it. And you don't have to do it with a studio partner; you can do it just for your own programming. But these are, I think, the type of tools that allow us to, you know, again, increase frequency and spend wisely to increase the revenues of the theater. You know, I'm a for-profit theater. We have one foot in this art house space, but then one foot in the commercial space. But everything we do is built around making sure that we make money and that we stay financially solvent and that we can keep on doing what we're doing. You know, there's lots of other things that I could talk about. I'll probably just mention one other. And this is this... this sense of the conversation and the mechanism by which we do that is we started a this is not unique in any way, shape, or form, but we started a movie culture blog online. But the thing that always pissed me off about basically every movie theater that has a movie theater blog is that every single movie is awesome and great, and it's just that's actually not true, as we all know. And so we poached somebody from the, a website called Chud, who's actually a seemingly 65-year-old curmudgeon in a 25-year-old body, and doesn't like a lot of movies, but fosters a lot of conversations. And we said, we will never edit you or censor you. We might ask you to, you know, maybe hold things that are completely negative until a certain point in time, but you have your own voice. And so the website is called Birth, Movies, Death. It's sort of the life cycle of any self-respecting cinephile. You're born, and then you watch really incredible movies, and some other stuff happens, and then you die. And so that's and what we do with that is we try to. It's an arm's length relationship with the cinema. It's related. There's links back and forth between the sites, but we're trying to have a conversation on a national scale and almost seeding the awareness of the Alamo Drafthouse brand in markets where we don't exist. And the Birth, Movies, Death team often does these similar type of conversational events, and it is about the conversation. And so similarly to what you were talking about, we employ two tools. One is the live streaming engine through YouTube, which is extremely simple and easy to do. If you have a video camera, you can set up YouTube as a live stream. it's, you know, with a couple hundred dollars, you can do this. It looks great. And so we can take conversations that are happening in one cinema and then time them so that they happen in all cinemas. And that idea of taking questions through Twitter, if you just set up a Twitter hashtag for the conversation, you can be taking conversations from Kalamazoo while hosting an event in Austin. And the Q&A, you know, have sort of a person on the side watching the Twitter feed and saying, we have a question from Kalamazoo in 140 characters, and feeding it into the conversation that's then live streamed out. So Birth, Movies, Death hosts those conversations under that brand. I think the cinema industry could die and fall away, but I don't think it will. But it's up to everybody who's in exhibition to just make sure that the experience is tremendous, whether that's added value, different types of offerings, conversations. But everybody has to be keenly aware that in the digital age, there are, you know, it's an expectation for exceptional customer service, whether it's Amazon shipping you something in 2 days for no cost, or whether if you take an Uber for a ride, knowing that you're being rated by the driver and you are rating the driver. And so it's just like every experience is rated on Yelp, Travelocity. Everybody coming to the cinema is rating the cinema experience. So we have to nail it. Otherwise, if it fails, it's our fault. On that positive note, I'm going to, I don't know, take questions or whatever.
So I'm not surprised your employees are watching their data every morning. They're thinking they get sacked in the afternoon. If it goes below 69, they're thinking, oh, my God, I'm going to be out on the streets. So, but anyway, I think you're trying to, away from that, I think what this notion of data, of actually checking, I think it's a kind of a missing link that we don't use much. It is interesting that cinemas are retailers as well as the place where all these things happen. And those kind of marketing tools that you're talking about seems to be that seems to be the starting point for you, and that the engagement and the other stuff kind of comes on the back of it. I just wonder what comes first in your considerations. Is it try to get to know my audience and then build experiences, or?
Well, we didn't have these tools initially, yeah. So I was the main programming voice of the cinema for a decade. And so it was really built upon this idea of me being there and being present and introducing shows and getting to know the customers and responding to questions either on, you know, social media when it arrived or via email or in person. And just, you know, having that sense of building a community. So I think the community comes first. All the other sort of digital toolkit is in service of building a community and building a real open, transparent dialogue with that community.
Because I know Europeans listen to these things, and it sounds, the idea of instinct, the idea of curation, the idea of all these things, for you it's quite clear, they're not contradictory, but I wonder where gut kind of comes in, because when you're measuring it, there's a feeling that, you know, there's probably consequences if your gut is wrong.
I love going with a gut decision, and I think programming-wise, it's and what your content is, a lot of that has to be gut, and it's not just gut. I mean, you hire people, like we have a creative director in each market where we are. We hire people that are the best possible voices. You know, they have a certain skill set that we're looking for, and then we just let them go. So go, you program whatever you want. We do provide them with the tools and the measuring to show, okay, this is where you succeeded and this is where you failed. Do we stop the failures, or do you make your failures successes? And that's basically on a financial basis. So it's not all data driven, obviously.
No. That's the really key point, and you put it really well. There is it's how much is driven by the fear of failure and how much of it is driven by a kind of risk and worrying about it. And I don't know, maybe you don't see that as a contradiction.
And I'm probably expressing it in a bad way about this culture of fear of failure within our company. We have one more data point that I didn't talk about, that same 10-point scale about how likely are you to recommend this experience to a friend. We use that for our staff as well. It's like once a quarter. It's like, how likely are you to recommend this job to a friend? It's anonymous, right? And so if people are living in fear and unhappy, then we've completely failed. So our goal is to make our staff really happy and do a lot of things about the culture to make them be proud and happy and not living in fear. So that's another data point I didn't talk about.
But you, I mean, I'm interested in your choice of data points because they seem to me. I mean, what you seem to be doing is saying, look, there are risks you can take, but actually these days they don't have to be quite as big a risk as they used to be because you can actually understand how your audience does and has interacted with that content. So maybe if you're looking at a film that's quite challenging, mm-hmm. it's less of a high risk if you actually know more about the people who are watching it.
And what the data doesn't tell you is that a skilled programmer, promoter, marketer, over the course of many years can build an audience that was failing 10 years ago and wasn't there. Like foreign language, it's a big priority for us to build a young audience for foreign language films. If you look at our data from 8 years ago, it's abysmal. But just by hard slogging and doing creative and innovative programming, we're slowly building that up. So you can create. The whole point is you can create new audiences by your own enthusiasm.
Just expand on that a wee, because that's a really good example of something specific. So young audiences for foreign language, it's every bit as much of a problem in Europe as it is in the States, certainly in the UK. Actually, it is in most countries. It's a very small amount. So you've identified a problem. Your data will show you there's a problem there. I just wonder if just give us an insight, just a little bit of how that strategy might have evolved and where your different kind of tactics kind of come in.
One of the things we do in terms of building foreign language audiences, we have a film festival every September. It's built around genre, so horror, science fiction, fantasy, and just weirdo films. But by the programming, we don't advertise this really necessarily, but the programming is about 85% foreign language. And so it's not dry drama or that type of film, but it's the genre film from around the world. And so I think if you can expose younger people that, you know, want to see The Raid or movies like that or Marantau before that, get them comfortable with subtitles and watching subtitles by having maybe this type of more aggressively young content of action, horror, sci-fi, fantasy, then that sort of sows the seeds of like what else is out there from these cultures and these countries.
Right, so it's kind of an R&D thing. You expose them here and then you test. So it's that kind of iterative process, bit by bit, mm-hmm. you're testing reactions. It's a really interesting, because the tools are there now. That's what's interesting. Mm-hmm. Those tools are available and relatively cheap, I guess, in yeah. response to the...
Absolutely.
Okay, any questions? Yep, one here.
So this is probably a question for you, but maybe all of you. Something that is quite clearly noticeable in all presentations so far is that the cinema seems to be moving from something very local, particularly the art house, to something much more global. I mean, for instance, I'm from Austria, and I'm very aware of what the Alamo Drafthouse and Drafthouse Films does since many years, which is probably collateral damage from all the advertising and data stuff you're doing.
Sorry.
And also, something that probably relates to that is that all of you seem to be expanding in a way, either by collaborating with other cinemas or by, in your case, building a chain of cinemas. And I wonder if that's something that's just because you guys are all so successful, or if that's something that might even be necessary to kind of make full use of the necessary energy to put into the kind of audience interaction, because the things you do are fantastic, but they take a lot of effort, and I guess one screen cinema run by five people can't do all the kind of stuff you can do. So do you think expansion is necessary to survive in the 21st century?
And if I can take your question a little bit, it's a great question, and I think everyone should talk to it. And I think it's that feeling of how far does cinema keep that local, and how does that contradict the fact that actually the ambition seems to be taking it more widely? I mean, Tim, you're still essentially a very local within their own areas, but you've expanded that out. Maybe you can answer.
I mean, there's a couple of interesting threads there. I mean, the first is, do you need to expand? Absolutely not. You know, I chose to expand because of, did I choose to expand? I just was thrust upon me, and then I became comfortable with it. But there's plenty of successful single-screen theaters that serve their immediate community. And so I think the important thing there is to, like in the States, there's an organization called the Art House Convergence, and that's about 500 independent theaters. We have a conference. It's starting to expand into to be a worldwide thing. It's just everybody is welcome to come to the Art House Convergence before Sundance in Utah and talk about you know, shared ideas, technologies, tools, all the things that a successful art community-based, mission-driven art house theater needs to survive. And so I think it's leveraging those partnerships, whatever they may be, whether they're community partners to help bring in audiences that are outside of your reach. That's what each individual theater can do. The idea that a five-person team can't do what, you know, a chain can, I think that's very true. And I think a lot of what we're trying to do by, you know, with live stream and that sort of thing is to take some of the burden off of the local individual creative teams so that we can duplicate a cool program. Yeah, and again, I think that speaks to the idea of collaboration, whether it's with partner theaters, partner organizations, or community associations, universities, so that really one of the great things about partnerships is though, so you don't have to have bear the burden of putting asses in seats on just those five people, that, you know, the university can help you do that.
Gonzalo, we're going to hear from you in a moment, actually, because, of course, yours is one where there is the base itself, you have to go out and kind of create communities. So maybe just give us a small preview of what you're about to talk about in a moment.
Yes, of course. Thank you, Michael. Thank you for the invitation. For me, it's a pleasure.
Yeah, actually, because can you hold on just 1 second? I just wanted your reaction first, because I want you to do your presentation in a moment.
It's the same. Stay here. But it's very important to create that connection with the people.
Yeah.
That's the important thing. We could create a discussion with the people that saw the film, but the good thing is create that kind of connection, that putting the film putting the film in the streets, and gave the opportunity to the people to see another kind of films. That is the strange thing about this kind of projects, no? This kind of.
And when we talk through yours in a moment, yes. Which we will, I mean, it's that you've got a local experience taken out. So, yeah. I mean, what's interesting is communities can be built on a local level at very, even temporary communities is what I think is really interesting. So hold your fire on that, because once we see your project,
yes.
I think everything's going to become much clearer, and I don't want you to give too much away. I wanted to ask Maddie just quickly, because you are talking much, I think, like Tim was about, in fact, both you and Evo, you're kind of creating partnerships. You've still got the fixed social space, which is what you're talking about. There is the local, but you're kind of creating coalitions, aren't you?
We are, and partnerships, I think, are absolutely key. I run a number of workshops for work. They're called Innovation Labs for Europa Cinemas, for the network. And I often hear these kind of comments, you know, what do you expect? Four people running a cinema, it's impossible. It is impossible. So you need to look at how you can change that model. You know, it's like you're trying to run a restaurant without the staff there, and just keeping on doing it without finding a solution to it. So to really look at how you can build capacity in your specific location is really important. So the forthcoming workshop in Bologna as part of the Il Cinema Ritrovato is going to be doing just that. We're going to be looking at a project that will happen next year. Gianluca was the director of the festival, has just wants to open a cinema in Bologna, on top of the Cinematheque, and we're going to spend 4 days trying to build a strategy with participants from all over Europe and from the States as well, from the Arts Convergence as well, to try to think about all those things, like how do you build an audience development strategy and a business model for a 400-seater in a historic site? There's a challenge, but
we can't just keep on trying to deliver at a very high level without building our capacity. At Watershed, our income stream comes from a whole range of different partnerships. We've got partnerships with two universities. We do a lot of work around new technology and pervasive media technology. We work with artists from all practices. A lot of our income is from project funding. We run a cafe bar. We do weddings, not funerals yet. But, you know, it's only something like 15% of our overall budget comes from turnover comes from public subsidy. 90% of our income practically is generated through different sources. You really have to do a business plan. You know, we forget that our sector sometimes, that we have to we are businesses. Even if we're dealing with culture, and we do need to put the steps in place. We do a lot of the stuff that you do, even though we're small, sort of independent sites. We look at, we've got patron base, we look at the interaction with the audience on Twitter, on TripAdvisor, and you're quite right. We have to be really vigilant, and whilst not also no longer taking risks because we're too worried about the data, because...
Right, okay. Hopefully the question was answered a little bit, because I'm going to need to move on. But I think that what we're saying here is that the local engagement is still absolutely essential. You can't get away from that. There are tools that allow you to make that local engagement more effective. But actually, in order to expand, you've actually got to create a coalition of some sort. You've got to create partnerships. You've got to create something. So I think that's the point you're making. Maybe our South African friend, you know, it's not about having to create a giant enterprise to begin with. And you know, Alamo just started as a tiny someone looking at it and thinking this would be interesting. So I think the answer to that question is complex, but I think it's also very promising because it suggests it's possible to expand without that extreme kind of capital investment. They're not becoming corporations. They're becoming communities which actually gather up other communities. Did anyone else have any last questions for Tim? Okay. We didn't say thank you. That was all. Thank you. Okay, so Gonzalo, you've had a sneak preview of what you're talking about. I think when people see it, they're going to get very excited about it. So please.
Okay. Ecocinema. Ecocinema is an international platform of professional mobile cinemas that we have a unique characteristic that we use solar energy to get the power to the inflatable screens, the beamers, all the equipment for the shows. We started 4 years ago. And in that time, we get a UNESCO report that told us in Latin America, each 10 people, only 2, goes to cinemas. That was very strange because we have a lot of new shopping centers, a lot of new multiplex theaters, but the thing that the prices of the tickets are increasing, and several people that has no access to cinema. And obviously, the new ways to see cinema, internet, VOD, Netflix, etc., goes in that direction too. So we decided to get back to the concept of the neighborhood cinema that we are losing. For example, in Uruguay, all my in my neighborhood we had 3-4 cinemas, and now all that cinemas are church now. So it's incredible. And I remember when I was a child in the school, give me always free tickets to go to the cinema, spend all the afternoon, see Star Wars, Indiana Jones, etc. But now all the child has no that opportunity. And thinking in the cinema as a social participation. No? So we decided to create a network, a platform of mobile cinema, getting the cinema to the people again. So I prefer first show you some example of our work and then explain something about that. When we decided to start the project, we decided to start working in two levels. First of all, in the social level, obviously, going to the cinema to a small village when it has no theaters at all, and put all my country always as an example, because it's very different country, because we have 19 states, but only have 3 states with theaters, multiplex, etc. All the country has no theaters. So we decided to go to that place that has no theater and put the cinema on the street, because it's very difficult that with that person that has not the experience or the need to go to the cinema, you convince them to go to a theater, pay a ticket, and saw a movie. So we prefer to create the theater on the square, on the beach, and making the shows for free. That was the social issue, no? Democratize the access of cinema. And we work also in another level, and another level was thinking in the other side, that the producer side, that thinking that we, as independent producers, has the opportunity to get to have our network to distribute our film simultaneously in various countries at the same time, and get a big audience, not depending of theater or commercial theater. No? So we decided to create this kind of network. That's the reason that we try to create a big network in presence in several countries. So we started in Uruguay in 2012 to make the first tour. We make 150 shows. Was very, very good for our country, and we decided to get some collaboration in several countries. That's connected with the last question. We have to make co-productions, partnerships, etc., and we decided to start the project in other countries. The second country we launched was Mexico. We have the Ecocinema Mexico here too with us. Was launched in 2013. And then started the launch in Brazil, Chile, Ecuador, and all the project now. Our goal is continue growing. Also, we have, and when also sorry, when we started to work, we knew that the power of that kind of shows, no? The power of outreach and engagement shows, no? How the cinema could be so strong to convince that people to get engagement in some social issues. So we started to do some educational workshops like that with children, so with adults, etc. And we decided to the first educational workshop. The topic was the solar energy in Latin America. Latin America now are trying to change his energy matrix. Every country, no, going to wind energy or going to solar energy. No, that is now this process in these years. So it was very important. And then it started to growing up. And when we started to growing up and making some shows, we saw another strength that project, as was the connection with another international institution or international companies that get interested in our project to promote another kind of things. For example, we are working now with Transparency International, TI, that we are now working and making a tour, especially in Brazil, about anti-corruption, making workshop with teenagers, explaining how in their daily life their decisions can make the corruption system, no? Especially in Brazil, with all the problems that topic has Brazil now. And making now also in Mexico, the last year we make a big tour with a public institution is against crime. Why against crime? Because we are using the public squares that in the night in the center of the city generally the people doesn't go to there because has crime, I don't know, narcos, etc. And with this project, we are going, we are taking the people out to that places for 5 days, 7 days, and the levels of crimes are lower. So it's very happy for us, no? Of course. But it's very interesting, the power of cinema, no? And now we are working in the in continuing growing the network. Our goal is for this the end of the year or the beginning of 2016 is complete one eco cinema in South American countries. We are launching Argentina, Paraguay, Colombia, Bolivia, and Peru. And for the next year, we're trying to open an eco cinema in Central America. Our goal now is to have one, at least one eco cinema in every country in Latin America, and get the opportunity to the people that go to a square or a beach or a park, etc., and go for free a cinema. And it's important, the other level, the level of production, because this is a network or our new challenge to distribute a film. For example, we buy the films. We don't get the film for free. We buy the films, pay fee for each show, screening. For example, I always told an example that is a Brazilian documentary, very small, that has no money to get a premiere in theaters, in commercial theaters, and starting in our project for 3 years, and this is 3 years, they have 400,000 people that shows that film, that saw that film, and get almost the same amount of money can range for us that the same of they could have it in a theater, a commercial theater. That is very important because we have a lot of independent filmmakers that has not the opportunity. And it's this, for the same reason that the beginnings or the growings of the multiplex theaters in the shopping malls, that we have 10 theaters, for example, and one film came in 3D, 2D, Spanish, English, etc. And the opportunity to distribute that our film, independent film, is pretty lower. So we are starting to work in this project. We are trying to developing, and our dream is expanding outside Latin America too.
Okay, that's amazing. It is an extraordinary project. I think everyone looking at it is kind of thinking, how much do those things cost? Because I want one of those expandable screens. But it also feels like something that actually could be done. I just want to just show very briefly, when you look at South America, where you're working. I remember Christian Munju when he won the Palme d'Or here with 4 months, 3 weeks, and 2 days. There wasn't the infrastructure of cinemas within Romania, and he actually went around with a van showing it up against walls. So it's not true that this wouldn't be relevant for Europe. But how much is it a very expensive operation, and who funds it?
Yes, we raise money from government, for private companies, for example, that takes that this project as a social responsibility project.
Yeah.
And international funds, too.
And who makes... I mean, that expandable screen thing seems to me like a fantastic option. I'm looking at that in just from my own film fund. I just wonder who makes those? Where do you get them from? Are they incredibly expensive?
Yes, we work with the local partners in each country.
Right.
That help us a lot to get the fundraising in each country. And we try to work in the international funds, fundraising internationally, and help us together to develop the project. And we work with a small team in every country.
Yeah.
Each band goes with 3-4 people, not more than.
And do you know how much they cost? I mean, I know this is a very
direct question.
Yeah, very direct question. I'm just interested in the van and the and the screen, what would be the...
Almost $100,000.
Right, okay.
With the solar system and the beamer and the
and
screen.
And presumably the petrol costs are pretty big as well, yeah, driving yeah. across. So it is, it's an expensive operation to do, but yeah. you're getting social... I mean, governments and others with social funds to actually come and support mm-hmm. it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And just in, one of the things I think is it's worth expanding on even more, you've got a very... very broad range of places that you go. So we saw the one in Mexico, that's in Mexico City, mm. and then it might be the tiniest community. How do you select the communities?
Generally with the government.
Yeah.
Because the project has two ways, no? The cultural way that we democratize the access to cinema and the energy way.
Yeah.
We have the, oh, in each country, the energy ministry is involved in the project. And they decide to go to, for example, in Chile, go to the Atacama Desert.
Yeah.
Because there the government is building the biggest solar camp, solar field yeah. in Latin America. And they decide to explain to the people in a small village why they are building that thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And that is the way. And for example, in other countries, in Mexico, we decided with the government go to there for the crime or for the needs to have a cinema, etc. It depends in every country.
Yeah. I mean, what's interesting, I think, is that this project, I mean, the beauty of it is the... It's got the ecological and it's got the social thing, but it's actually not done in it's, you know, it's a very direct action kind of approach here. I mean, theoretically, though, you could... I mean, solar panels wouldn't work in Britain. We wouldn't be able to show films any of the time. But actually, what is interesting, I think, is that option. If you, I mean, that's one way of doing it, but actually just expanding our cinema networks on a more regular basis seems to me kind of an interesting approach. Maddy?
I think, obviously, the UK is a very different landscape. I've been to Mexico. I know how hard it is, and congratulations. I'm so pleased the project has taken off. But in the UK, we also have that problem of a lack of provision in rural settings and small village hall. And as the lead organisation for a region which has lots of rural areas where there's a lack of provisions, we are looking at similar things. Obviously there's no sun in the UK.
Never.
So we're looking at other things, like we're looking at a pedal-powered cinema, which will go to different parts of the regions, and we're at that point where we're trying to scope the costs and so on. I think what's interesting with your project, it's not just a gimmick, the solar yeah. thing. You're telling a story. You know, it makes the thing compelling. And I think cinemas can learn a lot from that. How do we tell an interesting story of what we're about? So congratulations, it's an amazing project.
Thank you. You can change the solar system with the pedals, but it's the same, yes, with the same goal, no?
Yeah.
I think pedaling across yeah. South America would be quite hard. You could do it, Maddy. I'd struggle. I knew you would come in. So that, can we get the microphone here?
Well, I come from very sunny side, Durban, South Africa, so... Yeah, my question also, like Michael, is I'm very interested in the blow-up screens. If you can, which company actually supplies it?
Yes, the biggest company is Airscreen. It's from Germany.
Airscreen?
Airscreen.
Okay.
I could give you the contact if you want.
Please, thank you.
It is that the blow-up screen thing is quite ingenious because you're looking at this and thinking you can wait till it's sunny. So that's proper pop-up kind of cinema. But maybe it's just me. Maybe this is.
I also think what's wonderful about your project is even though the screenings are free and you're doing kind of social thing around expanding the audiences and going to them, you've also found a model. In terms of going back to production and actually financing production, however small it is, I think that's really brilliant.
Brilliant's just the word, isn't it? It's kind of breathtaking stuff. Anyone else got any questions? Okay, well, first of all, I'm going to say thanks to Gonzalo, because that was amazing. Having seen all the presentations, I'm just going to take the last kind of five, 10 minutes or so, just to kind of have a roundup and see whether there's anything that strikes you at the end of this. And I think at the start with Maddy's presentation, what we saw was
a number of things. I think the evangelizing really struck me very clearly, that if you believe in a film and then building a community around that film is possible, but it probably means going out. It probably means actually working harder than a lot of other cinemas, I think, are perhaps prepared to do. But actually, there is a feeling to me that what's really exciting is there is now a flow through those ideas from, this is the me thing. This is about me. I'm going here because I can recognize that on the screen. Then it's about my friends, where the innovation from social networks can kind of come in. Social networks of all types, including sticking stickers on a board, which is a form of social network in itself. And then expanding out so that other people can replicate that idea. Somewhere in there, I think, is the future of European cinema if we're going to go places, because it's very difficult to create demand for video on demand on its own. Being a library title in something with 10,000 other titles doesn't necessarily mean that anyone's going to even know you're there. But it feels to me like beginning here and kind of moving out. I think what Ivo did, which I thought was really to try and understand the lifestyle, try to understand the different levels, the different kinds of ways that people interact with films. And I think that's that individual response. You've kind of taken that in a quite a scientific way to think there are times at which cinema is most important to us. And actually, you've built things around that. I thought it was a very important and very honest point you made, that actually there's a hell of a lot of things you get wrong before you get to the point that you get it right. But that's the nature of business. And I think what we're hearing in all of the sessions in here, it's both the deepest belief in film and a belief in challenging film, and at the same time, it's utterly entrepreneurial. I know George Bush said there's no French word for entrepreneur, but I think entrepreneurial is exactly what we're talking about here. It's actually being willing to put your neck on the line and try these things out. What Tim, I think, showed was that a whole lot of tools can actually help make this thing more viable. I think it seems to me that using those tools, you're creating sustainable and viable ideas around you. It worries me that so many of these things are one-offs. That you try them out, they fail, and then that you've kind of written off. And I think there's actually a very, very bad habit in Europe of doing this, of thinking we gave it a go once and therefore it's not going to work. And I think what's important, data doesn't dehumanize this. Actually, what you're doing is capturing a lot of human interactions and bringing those together and repositioning them in a very important way. So you've actually got a very clear idea in your head of who those people are and how they're interacting. And Gonzalo's amazing thing was just the boundaries we think stop us from doing anything, the things that we think we can't do. And I hear this all the time, you know, the negativity of, oh, yeah, but, you know, it's difficult to get this film at this time. And, you know, we've got programming problems and the rest of it. That's how you do it. I mean, that's the ultimate, is just, well, if it's difficult to set up a cinema in a desert, why don't we just drive out there and set something up? You know, and I think it's that feeling of that nothing is going to stop us. And to me, that's what we're talking about in innovation here. It's building consumer demand, it's building consumer engagement, but it's really about just going out and believing and making these things happen. And I think in all different ways, you piece all those ideas together, and I think you've got a very clear idea, not just of the future potentially of exhibition, but actually the future of film too. Anyone got any last points? No, we haven't. That's it, apparently. Was that a good... Did I sum up right on time? Look at that. There we go, then. I didn't even know I was that good.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.